Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good buddy and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How was your weekend?
It went really well. Put the wife in the limo again this morning, sent her off to work. She's supposed to come back with some money at the end of the week, and then we get a couple of weeks to go play. We're headed to Pensacola for Christmas, and then we're going to Key West for New Year's, so we're getting very excited.
The Deep South.
The Deep South.
So what's that trip like for you guys?
Well, I haven't been to the Key West probably in 2 years now, so it's been a while for us. Everybody in the group has been to Key West at least once. We all know that we like it. My oldest daughter and my youngest daughter got together and designed the T-shirts, and my wife travels so much with IBM, we're getting to stay in a really nice place on points. And so we get to spend all our money on food and beverage.
There you go.
That's the plan.
It sounds like a Jimmy Buffett New Year's.
Yeah. But it's been a lot of fun working up to this. You and I have been very busy in the studio and out. Last week was a lot of fun. We did another remote broadcast.
Yes, we did the Tech America, their Spirit of Endeavor Awards. I think it's their 9th annual. And we got to interview some of the finalists, the nominees, and the winners of that. You know, these are the smartest people in town doing amazing things, emerging growth companies.
Well, that was the advanced press on it. You did most of the work. You did all, I think maybe I participated in one of those interviews, but I was busy being, and this, I did not come up with this label. They called it this. I was the voice of God when you announced the winners.
Yeah.
That was a fun gig.
Now, can you do a little bit of it? Do you remember any of your lines?
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, last year's 2010 recipient for the Tag America Award, Mr. I don't know who the names were. And that's what I did. And you'd read like a sentence or two sentences, and then I'd go back to drinking my coffee, and they would do their thing and the music.
Man.
It was fun. But the remote stuff, that's fun work if you can get it.
Yes, that's a lot of fun.
But, hey, we've got a studio full of folks this morning. Looking forward to visiting with these folks. We have a little bit later in the program, we have a couple of people returning. Mr. Joe Noonan, who has been on the show before with Proforma, and Dan McDade. So we're going to get a chance to talk with both of those gentlemen a little bit later in the program. And we're going to visit with Dale Sizemore, who is the founder and CEO of Flips Film, who I've not met before. I think maybe you know the guy.
No, I've never met him, but I've heard a lot about him.
Well, we're gonna learn more. But first up, on the High Velocity Radio Show this morning, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the gentleman who head up the wealth management firm of Sullivan and Schliemann, Mr. Andrew Sullivan and Josh Schliemann. Welcome to the show, gentlemen.
Good morning. Thank we're honored guys. To be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you here as well. As I understand it, though, we got to follow some rules if we're going to have a fun and productive, informative interview that keeps us all out of jail. So before we get into this interview,
yes,
I'm going to read something, Lee. But first, I have to put on my glasses. The opinions voiced in this show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing. Securities at Sullivan & Schliemann Wealth Management, LLC, are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Does that get us out of hot water, gentlemen?
You're out of hot water.
We're good to go. So now we can say whatever we want.
Okay. Well, I have a ton of questions. My first one, and I'd like to start with you, Josh, because you look a little bit, you're not quite as long in the tooth as the rest of us here in the studio. I gotta believe that sales and marketing in your world has got to be one of the toughest arenas because you're talking to people that have invested a lot of energy and effort into earning their money, and now you're coming to them saying, we can manage your money. How in the world do you even get a meeting with someone of considerable net worth so you can start to help them?
Sure. I think in our business, a lot of it's just relationship-based. Many of our clients come from current satisfied clients and relationships that we've built over a long period of time. Andrew, as you mentioned, a little longer than myself, but it's a lot about relationships. So as you gain trust through one individual, he or she then is comfortable referring your name to somebody else. So the relationship really brings the client to the table and gives us the opportunity to talk to them about managing those assets or their nest egg, as you mentioned.
And so, Andrew, how long have you been at this, and what compelled you to get into this line of work instead of something, you know, like a gravy train like radio hosting?
Well, I've been in the business almost 25 years.
Wow.
How I got into the business is I had a economics class, 16 years old, in high school, and we had a Merrill Lynch broker that came and spoke to us. And I was so intrigued by his presentation. From that point forward, I knew what I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Are you kidding? That's the truth?
Absolute true story. I tell it, and I'll stick to it. Interestingly, my
was
son...
Was he, like, handing out $20 bills?
No.
A 16-year-old going, I love economics. I'm going to be in wealth management.
Absolutely. I was so intrigued by it. I studied it and did everything in preparation to make this my career.
They were $100 bills, right? Not $20.
That's right. And interestingly, my son now, who's 15, is going through an economics class, and he's now intrigued by this particular field. Yes. Which I'm pleased.
Man, I got to have my kid hang out with your kid.
Yeah, no kidding. I couldn't add and subtract at that age. I had other things on my mind. No, that's terrific. When you first meet people, you must see patterns. You must see the same thing over and over. What kind of mistakes do people make when it comes to managing money?
Probably a couple of the biggest mistakes that we see individuals make are, one, wanting to retire too quickly, too soon, too young of an age, and several others, not saving enough money. And we can give some examples of that. The third biggest mistake that people make and that we often have to tell them about is that they need to fire their adult children. It's a huge, huge area.
What does that mean?
Well, let me first say that in our practice, one of the ways that we differentiate ourselves is that we will tell you what you need to hear and not necessarily what you want to hear. And sometimes those are very difficult conversations. I think as a society we've become accustomed that we can retire at 50. We can have 3 houses, 2 boats, 6 dogs, 8 cats. And live on an extravagant lifestyle. And I think this recent economic downturn has shown us that we can't do that. So we're going to have to pare back what we do as far as how much we save or retire at a later date.
I want to talk about the firing your kid.
Yes.
Does your kid know about this?
Yes. If my children...
That's why he's interested in economics now.
That's
he's
right.
Well aware, yeah.
If my two children are waiting on wealth from me, they're absolutely mistaken.
What about college? You in for that?
Yes. Absolutely. I will prepare them educationally as much as I can. But
so they graduate, hypothetically, they graduate from college, and they're like, hey, Dad, I don't have a place to stay. You're like, up.
Good luck. I see it so many times with our clients that the house of cards is already fragile enough with a particular parent. And then oftentimes the children come back. It's called the boomerang generation. They come back and they put even greater financial strain on the family. And they can oftentimes bring down the whole house of cards. We've seen it many, many times. It's a big, big mistake people make.
So you think that's kind of enabling that kid to not go out on their own, that sometimes they're not really serving their kid? They think they're helping them, but by letting them come back in and live indefinitely at home with no rent or no responsibility, that's really hurting the kid?
Absolutely. We have clients that are almost retirement age that they're still dependent on their parents.
Really?
Absolutely.
Well, it's just teaching bad lessons. As you said, if you allow the individual to benefit from that for a period of time, they never know when to turn it off.
Right.
So what does the process look like? If you seek me out or I seek you out and I'm beginning to say, okay, look, we're starting to make a little money here, but not holding on to as much of it as we wish we would. What does that process look like? Walk us through an engagement, if that's what you call it.
Sure. If you come to us, and typically, as Josh said, most of our new prospective clients come to us as a referral from either a current satisfied client or some sort of a center of influence, an attorney, a CPA. When we sit down, what we encourage you to do is a very comprehensive financial plan. And it is extensive questioning. It's a lot of work on your part as the client because you have to do a lot of research and pull together a lot of information that you may not have access to immediately. But I assure you, once you go through that process, you will know more about yourself financially than you've ever known. And once we crunch the numbers and go through the process, we then can fill in the gaps of where you are and where you want to go and sort of give you that roadmap. We call it the 6 degrees to Kevin Bacon. How do we get you to that end point of being able to retire when you want, on the income that you want, and not have to do what I consider my greatest fear, moving in with my children?
This is a theme with this guy, right?
Yes.
But no, you've obviously seen this is a real problem.
It is a huge problem, and I think, you know, back to my children, I think my children suffer as a result of some of the bad habits that I see our clients use when it comes to their children.
Now, you guys must be doing something right. You were just named the number one LPL financial firm in Georgia, and that puts you among the top 1% in the nation. So whatever you're doing must be working.
No. Josh, you want
well,
to
Well, absolutely.
That?
I think the two key things that we do different from many of our peers is we focus on the details, as Andrew just mentioned. Comprehensive planning, I think, goes back to one of the original questions, which is one of the biggest mistakes clients make is they don't plan. You'd be surprised how often we see individuals who are close to or past retirement age and say, hey, guys, maybe I should do a financial plan. Well, probably that's something that would have benefited them to do much, much earlier. So,
how early?
Yeah, how quick do you wait till after you're starting to make some really good money, or are you better off getting something together right out of school when you've got your first mid-management job?
Sure. I think there's varying degrees of what you can do and when. So when you get that first career, maybe you need to talk about what portion of my income can I save toward my 401k? How should I plan on buying my first home? So on and so forth. So there may be less planning that needs to be done at, say, 25 years old than there is at 55, and less topics to cover. But still, planning at all stages is very important.
But should I be engaging in a firm like yours at a young age, or you guys won't even talk to me until I'm at a certain level of wealth?
We really, again, a little bit unique. We excuse me, handle client relationships based on fit. When I say fit, what I mean is if their relationship and our relationship matches up with what we're both trying to accomplish. Our goal is to help individuals plan for their financial future of all types. So we have some young clients with a few dollars. We have some older clients with a few more dollars. But we don't incorporate minimums because we feel like it's about the fit, whether they're willing to take the advice and follow the suggestions that we make as we build on that relationship.
Are your clients more kind of corporate executive type people, or are they entrepreneurs that have their own business, like family business owners that have, you know, a lot of their wealth is in their business? Or do you have a mix?
We have a mix. I mean, a number of retired corporate executives, but a great majority of our clients are those that have worked all their working career and have been good savers and have built up a nest egg, and they now need us to help them sort of guide them through the rest of that financial phase of their life.
Now, do you help them, though, integrate? Because if you're a business owner, you have different kind of tax challenges, and you would, I would imagine, have a different relationship with your wealth management consultant than you would a corporate executive, you know, where all my money comes from my company and they pay me a salary. But if I'm have my own business, I have to invest in my business. I got all these other things. Do you guys work in partnership with me, or are you kind of set aside by yourself?
No, we do work quite closely with a lot of business owners, and us being business owners ourselves, I think it gives us a very unique perspective about how to guide you not only in the proper allocations and the tax ramifications, but also about issues that affect your business in particular.
Well, I would think you'd be in a position, too, where once you knew about my situation and you talked to me and my wife, number one, I would think that if it's a married couple, you want to be talking to both of us, right? You don't want me just coming down and telling you everything. You want to talk to the wife, too, right?
We do. We think it's very important that both parties are involved in that relationship.
Right.
And oftentimes, many of the clients that we deal with have second and third marriages, multiple children from different marriages. So there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of different dynamics with each of these situations.
Well, and I would think that also maybe, like Lee was talking about, when the situation is more complex, maybe you also have attorneys or CPAs or something you want to bring into the mix so that we get that full service. So do you coordinate activities like that as well?
Absolutely. We're big on the referral system to a series of centers of influence, those that send us referrals, but we also are good about sending referrals to other centers of influence, attorneys and CPAs. Additionally, when we do a financial plan for you, we will take your legal documents, for example, your wills and powers of attorney, and we will have an attorney review them as part of that planning process. We may have a CPA review your tax returns. So we're all trying to incrementally squeeze more benefit out of a relationship from the standpoint of, can we make your will better, your powers of attorney? Can we get a better CPA for you than you currently have?
But when you're an individual working with all those advisors, who's like the quarterback? I know the individual is ultimately responsible. They're like kind of the team owner. But who's the quarterback that's kind of driving this? Like, you know, who's the one that says, you know what, that CPA, this lawyer, this wealth manager,
Well, Lee, as you mentioned, I mean, it is a partnership between us and our clients, and we attempt to be that single point of contact for our clients on those financial topics.
Uh-huh.
So we will refer clients to a CPA or an attorney or another advisor when necessary to take care of specific needs that they have. And we try to quarterback that relationship and have those general discussions, not only about stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, but also about other topics that may pertain to their financial life, whether it's financing a car or paying off the mortgage or not, whatever the topic is that comes up in their life financially, we ask that they reach out to us so that we can either help answer the question or steer them to the individual that can give them the best answer.
And if I could give you a couple of examples of that, we always want to be your single point of contact in any financial question, whether you're, if you're going to, for example, buy a car, do I pay cash? Do I finance it? Should I lease it? What term should I finance it for? We also are a single point of contact, and this is where we also understand that our business is a 24/7 job. Just like you can have a medical emergency, you can have a financial emergency. That's why, for example, we put our cell phone numbers on our cards. Many times I've gotten calls on the weekends about some crisis that needs to be taken care of. Just a few years ago, a very good client of ours called me on a Saturday. I was at my lake house, and he had been pickpocketed. Well, we spent 2 hours calling every credit card company, getting the current cards canceled and the new ones issued. And then we came up with a list. All right, Monday, I need you to call the Department of Motor Vehicles. I need to call Social Security and get your Social Security card reissued. So it's that constant, always I'm available as to the clients.
But you're always watching my back, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, to me, that's huge. And the minute you asked that question, I was thinking, I want this guy to be my quarterback because I want to be able to, I want that one-stop shop where I want to be able to say, look, can I afford a car? Holly wants a new car. Can we afford a new car? And if we can't afford a new car, how should we pay for it? Should we lease or buy? So I like that idea of having one person center. I'm curious, if I were in the market for that quarterback, that wealth man, what kinds of questions should I be asking someone that I'm talking to? I'm considering engaging them. I don't even know what questions to ask to make a good hire, if you will. Any insight? Could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I think it's important that you look at, I've even got information on how do you make a client financial advisor relationship work. I think it's very honest, open communications. It's regular and consistent meetings. It's again, having some of those tough conversations about, yes, you can afford a car, or no, you cannot afford that car. Can I retire? Can I not retire? I think it's important to know exactly what the track record is for a particular firm as far as their performance on their portfolios. What do they charge? How are they compensated? I think those are some of the important topics that you need to ask.
So what are some of the ways that financial management people are compensated?
The two main ways that we are compensated, the old traditional brokerage, where it was a transactional base. You call me up and you want 100 shares of a particular stock, XYZ, and the commission is a percent of that transaction. Or you buy a bond and there's a certain markup on that bond. That's the old way. And there are still clients that we have that buy their investments through us in that manner. The most common today, and it is in our practice, where it's a fee-based management fee, where based on the assets that we manage, we charge you a percentage of the assets that we manage. It's typically charged quarterly. And we think that's the best way for a client relationship because, quite frankly, it puts us on the same side of the table with you.
Right, I like that.
We want to make more money off your relationship. I'd love to double the amount of money that we make off your relationship. Well, guess what we have to do? We have to double the value of your account. So we have a vested interest to make sure that we minimize your portfolio downturn when markets get bad. And we also have a vested interest to make sure that they go up as much as they possibly can in the upturns.
I think you have to focus on, too, if I can answer the question additionally, is what you mentioned. You got comfort when you said, hey, this is the guy I want to be my financial quarterback, right? When you're talking to a potential advisor, if their discussion is about product or a particular investment, then maybe they're not looking at your entire picture and doing that comprehensive planning, which gave you some comfort. If that's not the case, then maybe that's not the right fit for you. So if the individual is having discussions with you about wills and powers of attorney, as Andrew mentioned, your taxes, other topics besides just your financial assets, that would be a key point for me to say, hey, I'm on the right track toward picking an individual to help me manage my financial future.
I mean, just as another example to that, to make sure that we are always giving you the best possible service, We have had for 8 years a client advisory board. We have 15 to 16 members of our good clients that sit on this board, and it's a two-year rotation. And we come to them two times a year. It's typically April and October. And we ask them, here's three topics we need to talk about today. How do we improve our service, and how do we improve your experience with us as a client? And we've gotten tremendous positive feedback and a lot of great ideas from our clients. They're our best source for how do we improve what we do.
Well, they do just what we tell them that we're going to do for them. They tell us sometimes what we need to hear and don't want to hear,
right.
And that's
absolutely
how we improve.
Well, how great it is that you have that relationship with your clients. I mean, and that's so much stronger over the longer haul. And both of you gentlemen just, for me anyway, just exude credibility and confidence. If yeah. I had any money, I'd be talking to you right after the show. But maybe now's the time to talk, right?
Absolutely. Right. It's never too late or never too early.
Plan for the future.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you both on the show. I'd love to have you come back sometime.
Do you think that one of your clients would come on with you?
And oh,
I'd imagine so.
Absolutely,
yeah,
we could definitely do that.
All right. Well, we ought to make that happen. Well, before we let you go, let's make sure that our listeners know how to get in touch with you so that they can have that candid conversation.
Absolutely.
With you,
phone number to reach us is 678-867-0500, and our website is sullivanandschliemann.com. Let me spell that.
good luck.
S-U-L-L-I-V-A-N. And the and is spelled out, A-N-D, and Schliemann is S-C-H-L-I-E-M-A-N.
Well, thank you again, gentlemen, for coming on this morning. The offer is quite sincere. We'd love to have you come back. I think with a delighted client, Lee, that's a marvelous.
Right, because I think it's interesting to see how in real life how a person interacts with their wealth manager, because I think, as you said, you know, if you're getting paid every time there's a transaction, that creates one kind of relationship. But if you're just looking out for the best interest of somebody else, that's another kind of relationship.
Sure, absolutely.
We'd love to do that.
Well, and it's such an important topic, and it's a topic that some of us bury our heads in the sand. And I've got I have friends that make half of what I make and can buy and sell me three times over. And I have friends that make double what I make and don't have a pot to pee in. And
sure,
it's because they're not managing their money, and I'm kind of somewhere in the middle, I think, at this point. So, well, thank you again. Hey, can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely.
Love to do that. Yeah, thanks a lot.
All right. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is the founder and CEO of Flips Film, Mr. Dale Sizemore. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks. Welcome, folks.
So are you feeling richer already after listening in on that interview?
You're much smarter now, right?
Absolutely. It's funny that they brought a lot of topics to bear. This is exactly what I believe in, is the ability of getting all the right information from the right folks into the right hands to make the right decisions, and it improves economic development and the economics of individuals. That's what I want to do, and that's what we're doing already in the film and the economic development here in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, why don't we talk a little bit about the film industry in Georgia first, just to kind of get an overview of what's happening and why a firm like yours would become necessary, because it seems to be exploding nowadays.
It does. Appreciate it, Lee. There's over $700 million that was filmed in fiscal year 09 here in the state of Georgia, and $689 million. So there's a lot of films, 350 productions in the range of 2009.
How many do you know, like right now, about how many are going on?
At any given time, there's anywhere from a dozen or more.
Because everywhere I look, I see those big trucks and those signs that say crew parking. It seems like they're in every corner nowadays.
That's right. Georgia's done a great job of attracting the film industry, film and TV and production industry, music videos as well, because of the tax credits as well as the topography. And also, there's a good intent to try to bring the film industry here. One of the things that caused me a year ago, December 8th, to start this business was an article I'd read that said how difficult it was when someone wants to film in a community, all the complexities of organizing all that. And I said, oh, come on, there's got to be someone that's doing that.
How hard could it be, right?
Yeah, with all the moving parts that you see, I don't know how anyone ever gets one of these things done. My respect has gone up a lot. So I said, I can probably fix this problem. Did a deep dive, talked to a bunch of folks in economic development, in the film industry, and I put together a one-stop shop software service that helps stitch together all the requirements that are necessary to do a production in a community, whether they actually formally permit or just have to do the production coordination, and gets the information into the hands of folks who are on a very tight timeline, and when they have an issue or a delay or a mistake, that's very, very expensive.
Now, can you explain to our listeners that maybe don't understand how this works? Like, a company from out of state will say, I want to film in Georgia, right? And then they're going to send somebody down here to look around, for locations that are correct for what their needs are.
That's correct. There's a, it's a pretty complex process, whether it's a large production or even an independent, and there's more and more independents because of technology and budgets and things. So a lot of folks don't have these dedicated people who are very skilled. Those are location managers, location scouts. We are a tool for those kind of folks, just as multiple listing service is for realtors. We avoid the need to travel to a location or get someone after hours or call the Chamber of Commerce president on the weekend.
One call to you solves a lot of problems.
Actually, they don't even need to call me. They can just go online and they can find out what it needs to film in Henry County or Forsyth County, for example, and find out what the policies are. But we actually go beyond that. We provide some business rules and intelligence. What are community events that are going on that could affect that filming, whether that's noise or access to resources, and also help showcase some of the local vendors in that community, which the economic development folks in those communities always want to be able to do.
So is it catching on?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In less than a course of a year, we've got half a dozen or so clients signed up, and there's about 22 more that are on the string here in the next 30 to 45 days.
So this is going to be a non-issue for you since now you've been on the High Velocity Radio Show. But prior to today, how did you get the word out? How did people find out that they don't have to jump through all those hoops? They can go to this one place and get on this website. How do you do your marketing, man?
It's a pretty closed community, oddly enough. The folks that do a lot of these location scouts and pre-production processes know about this. We've worked very hard for this first year to be able to bring together an actual working minimal viable product, as they call it, in the market space. So the actual communities that are deploying this, the filming folks are starting to encounter it as they go and talk to those folks, as well as dialogue with industry groups and individuals as well.
Now, when you're out there doing what you do, I know you've learned a lot since you first started, right?
Boy, howdy, yeah.
Now, is this something that now you're going to try to replicate in other states?
My focus is in Georgia for now.
Lee wants to buy the franchise,
exactly.
Man.
Exactly.
You had to play this thing out.
If we can talk about this, then we'll go deal with the wealth management guys.
Exactly.
Right after that.
Because I would imagine there's a need. There's other.
Yeah,
we're not the only state that's trying to woo film people.
It is, and it's not terribly hard to think about going into other states. You replace vegetation with cactus or take a county with parish and keep going. The need is there, and it becomes more and more of it. It was so ironic to hear Stone talking about going down to Key West. The Georgia Department of Commerce, Economic Development, and the Chambers have said that value of a tourist is $2,000 when it comes to a community. Well, you don't have to do a whole lot of enhancement to the tourism industry to bring in a $2,000 tourist. And filming is actually generating a lot of tourism, which is actually the number two industry in the state of Georgia.
Right. Now, have you calculated how much time you can save somebody that's in a film? Like, if they use your service rather than sending somebody to go knock on all the doors of every government office?
It depends on the complexity, of course, but if you think about getting in the car and driving down to South Metro in the rush hour traffic, it doesn't take long to figure out that 8 hours here and there can make all the difference in the world. More importantly, it's the kind of things that we get actionable insight into the hands of the people that need it. When you're filming and you got everything all done and noise kicks in because there's a band or something going on that you didn't know about, that can delay a production that costs $50,000 to $100,000 a day.
Right. That's what I don't think the listeners really appreciate, that when a film crew is out there, it's not just one guy. It's not two actors and a director. There's could be 100 people there.
Exactly. On a medium-sized feature film, it's 150 to 175 people. On a large one, it's 200 to 250 people. That's a lot of coordination. And if anything goes wrong, I mean, it's risky enough as it
right.
is.
Right. 1 hour delay, you're multiplying
you're
it by 200.
You're paying all these people, right?
That's
oh
right.
God, delays must be incredibly expensive.
Exactly. And there was one occasion south on a very large production where everybody was doing their job right, and a noise factor kicked in, and they said, oh, my gosh, we've got to come back and film the next day. Well, they were filming outside, us hoping that it's, you know, the weather's the same and nothing else
the
is going on.
The lighting's the same.
The lighting's the same, and, you know, casting and makeup and all that kind of stuff. It gets pretty pricey.
Yeah, so anything that could save them time saves them a boatload of money, I would imagine.
That's exactly right, and that's what our goal is. We want to be the multiple listing service of realtors to the film and production industry. Oddly enough, with the lower of prices of technology, there's a lot more independent films being done. Some of the investors are saying, I'd rather do $5-20 million films than a $100 million film. Those smaller films don't have the vast ranges of resources, and they need things that are automated and tools. Like one commissioner said, this is like asking us to be the librarian without a way to find the books. So the economic development folks like this in the communities. The chambers of commerce love this. The folks that say we don't have to bring in six or eight people from different departments to make an evaluation, we can do this online. It doesn't have to be a hard process.
So where can we find you online?
www.flipsfilm.com stands for Film Location Intelligent Permitting System. Flipsfilm.com, or you can reach me, Dale, at Flipsfilm, or 678-576-5100. That's my cell phone.
Well, what a fascinating and incredibly valuable service that you provide. This is terrific.
That's right. Niches bring you riches, right, Dale?
And that's my hope. Thank you. I wanted to bring a real job that solved a real problem for real people and keep jobs in America.
Good for you.
Well, I think you've absolutely hit the mark, man. Thanks for coming and sharing this with us.
Thanks for having me. Hope you have a happy holiday.
Well, thanks. Hey, you going to hang out with us while we visit with some of our other guests?
You bet.
All right. Well, next up on the High Velocity Radio Show is no stranger to our studio, Mr. Joe Noonan with Proforma. And he's our go-to guy for all your promotional materials, and he's probably got some new stuff to talk to us about. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you, Stone. I appreciate it. It's the third time visiting with you.
Yeah.
This one will be the charm. We'll get it right this time, right?
There we go. I like it.
Well, next time we're going to put him in your chair and let him work with
exactly.
all the buttons and stuff, right? So what's new in the promotional world?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I mean, just to paint a big picture for you about Joe Noonan and Proforma. Proforma is a national company. We've got sales of about $360 million, and we've got 650 offices across North America. And it's always exciting. It's always fun, and there's always opportunities out there because as things turn, marketing managers are looking at their budget for 2012, and they're getting that budget and comparing that to the way it was, say, even 5 or 10 years ago. The big word now is ROI. And so by employing some of the things that we do at Proforma, we'll put together marketing campaigns for folks using printing, promotional products, and some 3D marketing. And at the end of the day, working with my clients, I just want to make them look like a hero. And it's really, really important. And that's what they're looking for. They're saying, okay, how can we do that? How can we achieve ROI with our marketing dollars moving forward?
Now, how do you do that? Like, how do you quantify, a bunch of flash drives equals 3 clients?
Well, it's not just about products, Lee. It's a lot about relationships and the end result. So in meeting with some of my clients, what I like to do is really find out a little bit about their audience, who they are, what they're trying to accomplish, and at the end of the day, is to help them with their brand. And you can do that a lot of different ways. And I'll give you a great example. One of the neat things in a direct mail campaign that we would do for somebody is with a clear postcard. Okay?
Clear.
Uh-huh. A postcard. Clear postcard.
Gotta admit, I haven't seen that before.
There you go. I have a sample, but on radio, it's probably not going to help, right? But what it is, and I'll give you an example. There's a large car company, and so if you go into their showroom and you test drive their, say, their 944, all right, the following Saturday you will get a postcard that is personalized, and that's one-to-one marketing. So that's something else that we would bring to the table and tie that postcard into pearls or personalized URLs where people can go in and touch base on surveys, and you're learning more about your consumer. So that following Saturday, after you test drive that 944, you get this clear postcard, and the postcard says, hold this up as you're walking up your driveway, and it has a silhouette of the car that you just test drove.
Well, this personalized URL thing, we've had a couple of people come in and talk about
right.
This is fascinating to me. Talk more about that for our listeners that may not know what that's all about.
Okay. Personalized URLs are just a vehicle to help promote and track your marketing dollars. So, for example, we would send out, in this case, a clear postcard and put a personalized URL in there. And the URL normally would have, stoneisacoolguy.com. You would go and click on that, answer 3 to 5 questions. So that helps me as the client understand you a little bit better. But it also tells me what your likes and your interests are and tells us that we're interacting. And, again, kind of goes back to the results.
Well, I'll tell you what. When I do that and it asks me what color I like and I say red, am I right in that the next time I go in, it'll be a red Porsche that I'm looking at on that website?
Absolutely.
Because it's learning, right?
Absolutely.
That is so.
Right. So you're defining results not necessarily in as something sold, but just in a deepening of a relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I've been in this business for 22 years, hence the gray hair. And at the end of the day, you know, people say, well, you're in the printing business, Joe, or you're in the promotional products business or 3D marketing. I'm really in the relationship business because I want to make my clients look like a hero. And the only way by doing that is just establishing that relationship. You know, I have my very first client from 22 years ago. And, you know, that's a testament because I really, you know, I'm not real fancy. At the end of the day, I just want to make sure that we're coming up with good, effective marketing campaigns to help them achieve results, to help them promote their brand.
Well, it must be very important for you to create some distinctive personal service because, candidly, we can all get on the web right now and go order promotional products. Mm-hmm. But you take the people in this room right now. We have two gentlemen from a wealth management company. You have two people who have a radio network, an executive talk network, and we're starting to do more trade show work. And we have a gentleman here who's doing a lot of stuff with economic development and helping the film industry, and we have an author, speaker, expert in the sales arena. We all have promotional product needs, but you can't come in here with one size fits all. You really have to get to know us and think through what we're trying to accomplish, don't you?
Absolutely, and that's my job. My job is to bring bright ideas to the table to help you cut through the clutter because it used to be number of touches in the world of marketing, and I know Dan will probably touch on that too, is it used to be 5 to 7. Well, you walk out the door of your home or your office, and you will see within 15 minutes 5,000 impressions. So now that number has changed where it's going to take about 9 to 11 touches for somebody to understand who you are, what you do, and your brand.
Okay, so these other guys are on their own. It's all about me right now. Lee and I, we are doing a trade show. We're having a radio show inside a booth at a radio show at a trade show in February. So that's going to be cool and sexy and all that, but what are some things we could do to augment that with promotional products?
Well, I think if you know who your audience is or right. a group of people that you want to attract, you could do a direct mail campaign with a postcard.
Letting them know that we're going to be there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay. And it's not one and done. It's right. Again, it falls back on number of touches. And that's really what marketing is number of touches to educate people about who you are, what you do. And so you could do that. You could tie it in with a pearl on that postcard. So you're giving them the opportunity to click on that pearl, answer some more questions.
Oh, it could be like joescoolinterview.com, right? Because right? they're coming in, we're interviewing them,
right?
So then we could build a little page. We could post could you do that? You could post the audio right on their little personalized little page, right?
You could do that, sure. But the other thing is that you want to incentivize to come see you at the show. So if you say, hey, if you answer these three questions, tell us a little bit about you, we'll give you a cool mug. All right? And that's what you want. You want to get them or you want to have them be attracted to who you are and what you do. And that's the great luxury about
But these
pearls.
Are the kind of conversations that you have with people instead of us just on our own looking through the catalog and Lee picking the wrong thing.
Right, right. Yeah. And it's products and services are part of it, but at the end of the day, it's all about understanding who your audience is. How do we get them in?
Right.
Let's bring them to the table.
And you have a lot of best practices based on dealing with this for lots and lots of clients in different industries, right?
Absolutely.
So I could see the value there rather than one of those online people where you're just clicking on things and hoping that that's something that's going to work.
Right. And you come to me, right? I mean, I can get on the phone with you and you'll come out and visit with us, sit down with us, learn a little bit about our business, that kind of thing.
Absolutely. You know, my office is right at 85 and 285 here in Atlanta. I get there about once a week. I spend most of the time meeting with clients. And like our friends on the wealth management side, you know, it's all about relationships, you know,
sure.
and people really appreciate the fact that you can go and look them in the eye and be able to present ideas and talk about that. And the other thing, the reason I like to meet with people at their office, they normally bring other people in and you know, usually the decision makers, because sometimes they say they're the decision maker, but they're not always the decision maker. And that way we can get the, you know, any if they want to order, you know, flash drives or whatever the case may be, we can do a fulfillment program for them too and send it out anywhere in the country. So another example is I just, with one of my clients down in Miami, they're a large law firm. They wanted to send out some gifts to their top clients. And so we sent out 265 gifts to their clients. It had to meet certain standards. It had to be, you know, some fruit and some candy and everything else. Very professional, and it had to make it by a certain deadline. And, yes, we're in the deadline business, too.
You must sweat deadlines all the time. Or maybe you don't sweat them because you're organized.
I love it. Right. I love it. I'm a very detailed person. I'm usually in my office by about 6 a.m., and some of my clients know that, and they call me, and the phone rings, and, of course, with caller ID, you know who it is at 7 a.m., but that's okay, too.
So how can our listeners reach out and get in touch with you?
Well, the best way is my website is performa.com/JoeNoonan, N-O-O-N-A-N. My email address at Proforma is joe.noonan@proforma.com. And my direct phone number here in Atlanta is area code 770-972-9122 for marketing and bright ideas.
Terrific. And you're going to hang out with us after the show and talk to us about some promotional ideas here at Business Radio X.
Absolutely.
And we really got to know you and Business Marketing Association. We've really thoroughly enjoyed that relationship as well. So a quick shout out to our
the BMA.
Our buddies over at BMA. What a great organization they are, huh?
They are. They're having another successful year. And, you know, actually, I'd like to plug their organization. I'm not on the board of directors with them anymore.
Right.
After 5 years, you know, I really enjoyed it. But, you know, sometimes you just need some fresh blood in there. And so you can learn more about the Business Marketing Association at BMAAtlanta.com.
All right. Terrific. Hey, listen, hang out with us for a little bit. We've got one more guest we want to visit with.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Well, next up and last up on today's version of High Velocity Radio Show is a gentleman who we have visited with before, Mr. Dan McDay. Welcome to the show, man.
Good to be here with you guys.
Good to see you again. I know you're up to all kinds of stuff. You got a new book out. You're helping folks. Get us caught up.
Well, the book has done very well. The book was published at the beginning of this year, and it's actually finally available on the Nook,
the Nook.
The Kindle.
I saw the Nook the other day. Yeah,
the iTunes. You know, everything's up and running right now. So we had to go find somebody that had a Mac to get it up on iTunes, but we finally accomplished that. So my daughter has a Mac, so she was able to help us. But the book's done well, and getting out of 2011, which has actually been a really good year, looking forward to 2012. We hope the economy holds together and we continue to have success.
What is the title of the book?
The Truth About Leads.
And what is the truth about leads? We've all been duped.
Yeah. Well, this is a good time to, you know, go over maybe a summary of the truth about leads, because it's all about what should you do differently as you look into 2012 as compared to 2011. And I think we find that companies seem to be making the same mistakes over and over again. At the top of the list is building your database and making sure that you have a very targeted database. We're always amazed at companies that really don't have a very good idea of what their target market is. Joe mentioned that, and I can vouch for Joe's detail orientation, because he asked me to speak one time, and he put me through the ropes there. as Joe said, you know, making sure that you understand your target market. Most companies, we find that they actually target too broadly as opposed to targeting narrowly. And what happens, unfortunately, if that's the case, is you're actually wasting money, because you're targeting and selling to people who aren't going to buy from you.
But why do we do that? Because I think we all, myself included, I feel like I don't want to miss that one potential sale way out there on the edge. Why are we driven to do that?
Well, I think to some extent it's just not understanding, you know, about market segmentation. If you go to our website, which is pointclear.com, and go to the resources tab, there's an article that has the word segmentation in it. It's about a 10-page article, but it's all about market segmentation. So for those of you who are really into market segmentation, check out this white paper or article that's on our website. But I think the problem is just exactly what you said, Stone. People are worried that they're going to miss something. And I always tell people, do you think you'd be better off spending $10 on one prospect or $1 on 10 prospects? And, you know, the reality is that if the $10 on one prospect gave you a better chance of closing that business, then obviously that's what you'd be better off doing.
So that's a trick question, because it really matters who the prospect is.
It really does. It matters a lot. But
I think it would be more fun, just for pure fun, to spend $10 on one prospect if you felt like you could close
it. It seems easier.
It seems easier, and you can do higher-end stuff. You can FedEx the thing to them instead of mail it to them.
Yeah, I mean, and I deal with this every day because I carry a bag for our business, and you know, I'm the number one salesperson for a very small company.
But, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. But, you know, I have to make that trade-off every day to say, I'll tell you, at the end of every week, one of the things I say to myself is I didn't focus enough on the big business and I focused too much on the little business. So, you know, making sure that you spend time and put investment into those prospects, and I call them the less expensive barrels of oil. If you look at your business as drilling for oil, you know, if you can go down 500 feet, that's a lot less expensive than going down 10,000 feet. So how can you identify at the top of the pyramid those prospects that are the best prospects for you and put all of your time and attention on those prospects?
So are you going to tell us how?
Yeah.
Is that a secret?
Lay it on us, man.
Well, you know, in truth, it's hard. And I think that's why sometimes you have to bring in experts like Joe. And you know, it's difficult to do the targeting. But, you know, one of the things is to take a look at the current customers that you have and use that as a model for going after new customers. A lot of times, about half of the time, we'll ask our clients to describe their customer base, and they'll say, well, we don't want to sell to the clients we have now. We want to go after bigger companies, you know, bigger business. And you have your current customer base for a reason. So if you self-select the definition of your current customer base and you push that out and you say, I'm going to go after only bigger clients, chances are you're not going to have a whole lot of success. So what I say is that take a look at all of your clients and you know, write down what's common about them. Is it their SIC code, the range of revenue, the number of employees, the type of business that they are? And you just look at all of those characteristics, and then you can go into, oftentimes there's some free resources out online. You can go into go out and run counts. There's a little bit of difficulty in that only because it's not intuitive how to do it. So you might want to get some help. If anybody wants to call me for some help, I'll give you the contact information here in just a little bit. But it's just very important to target your market and also to test that market. One of the things in that segmentation article we talk about is, I call it the 97531, which basically means, just to give you an example, the average company will send out 1,000 of something, you know, whether it's a postcard or make 1,000 phone calls or whatever.
As a test or just their marketing?
This is just their marketing. I'm using 1,000 as an example because it makes the math easy.
Okay.
And let's say you were fortunate enough to get a 5% response rate. 5% is probably high for most efforts, but let's say you get a 5% response rate.
Well, unless you're working with Joe Noonan, because his direct mail pieces are like dynamite, right?
Right. So, you know, you might send out 1,000 and you might get 50 responses, let's say.
So now I got 50 hot leads.
Well, I got
these are the Glengarry leads, right?
Yeah, right. Glengarry, Glenn Ross leads. Yeah. Remember, coffee's for closers, guys.
That's so. It.
But, you know, the reality is that there was a segment of that 1,000 that the top 200 you got a 9% response on, and the bottom 200 you got a 1% response on.
But we didn't pay attention to that, did we?
You didn't pay attention to that because you didn't basically set the test up in advance in order to read the results. So as a result, most companies go out and they send 1,000 of something out, they get 50 responses, they go to sales. Sales usually ignores them, you know, and in the end, they really haven't driven the ROI that Joe talked about. And he's absolutely right that everything is about measurement these days. So, you know, if you can't prove ROI, the chances are you're not going to get funded to do the next project.
Test and measure.
Test and measure.
Well, I want to ask you about the referral side of things, because I get the sense that you know your stuff across the board when it comes to sales. You know, we had the wealth management guys on at the top of the show.
Do you remember them?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I made a note to, you know, take care of one of my children later today.
Exactly. So they shared with us that so much of their business comes from referrals from delighted clients. And they're not the first people to share that with us, particularly people at their strata that are operating at that level. But it occurs to me some organizations, that's the case, but they leave it to chance. And other organizations are very intentional about cultivating that, nurturing that, capitalizing on that, and getting the ROI that they need, want, and deserve from that. Are there ways to be very intentional about that and make that happen on purpose instead of just hoping that it happens?
Yeah, I hope there's a book out that years ago, the title was Hope is Not a Strategy. And
I like that.
That's a great title. Yeah, absolutely. And I made a huge mistake several years ago when I decided that I wanted to be a president instead of a salesperson. And I basically took myself out of circulation and I hired salespeople, but unfortunately, I didn't necessarily make all of the right decisions in that regard. So I found that I had to get right back out and really do self-promotion. One of the things that I learned, I had a relative who was a lawyer, and she told me one time that she had a quota of having to have 7 meals with a client or a prospect every week. And I'm thinking to myself, that's a pretty expensive process. You know, an attorney is billing $300 an hour.
Yeah, really.
But they were tasked, and I know some lawyers here in town that basically they have 3 lunches and 3 breakfasts and, you know, 3 dinners every night, you know, with people, because they know it's important to be out in front of the prospect. So, you know, the mistake that I made some years ago was to make myself invisible. And what I've tried to do over the last couple of years is to reverse that. So you'll see me at any meeting, you know, that I can attend, you know, having meals with somebody. I was having a lunch the other day just down the street with a
first
prospect.
Lunch or a second lunch?
And this is my, actually, this Friday I'm having my second lunch with the same guy. But he introduces me to a guy who was a very senior executive in another technology company who happens to be sitting right next to us. Okay, so then I've engaged in a conversation with this guy. So you just always look for opportunities to build a relationship, make a relationship. And it's important also to use social media in that regard. Sometimes folks say, well, something as simple as Twitter really isn't that important. But, you know, if you get a tweet from somebody that says that they're down at the in Orlando enjoying an afternoon at Epcot Center, and you can say, hey, you know, did you check out the UK exhibition at the end? It was a hot day, and I happened to have a great cold beer when I was halfway through this exhibition. You know, just developing that personal connection is very important. So, you know, use social media, you know, reach out and start to build your network, and I think you'd find it would pay off for you.
So all the great technology that we have, it's fine to use that to enhance our relationships, but it doesn't replace but just good old-fashioned building relationships. I'm hearing that theme through our entire show.
Seem important.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. People, you know, it sounds trite to say, but people buy things from people. People don't buy things from companies. And despite the fact that this year, around 55% of all salespeople will actually make their number, which means 45% of all salespeople are going to miss their number. And
that's job security for you, right?
let's send them all the book.
You know, there's fewer salespeople today than there were even 2 or 3 years ago. So you would expect that the salespeople who have, you know, stayed in their jobs are probably some of the better salespeople. So, you know, nobody can afford to be complacent. Everybody has to be out there beating the bushes for new business. And, you know, we can help you do that. But, you know, we just ask you to remember to look at your market, make sure you're following processes, which include looking at the quality of the leads, the quantity of the leads, and the actual outcome of the leads. Because so many leads generated are actually just squandered by companies because sales doesn't follow up with them.
So how can salespeople and sales leaders get their hands on this book, The Truth About Leads, and, if they so desire, have a substantive conversation with you about some of these important dynamics?
Well, thanks for asking. If they just want to take a look at the book, and it is available both as a real book and an electronic book, they can go to Amazon, or they can go to Barnes & Noble, or they can also go to iTunes. And again, it's called The Truth About Leads. You can reach me at dan.mcdade@pointclear.com, and Point Clear is spelled just like it sounds, or you can call 678-533-2722, or to visit our website, it's www.pointclear.com.
Well, thank you, sir. And that is for The Truth About Leads. Well, did you learn anything today, Lee?
Yes, I thought it was a very informative show.
Good stuff. Well, until next time, this is Stone Payton, Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, Josh Schliemann, Andrew Sullivan, Dale Sizemore, Joe Noonan, and Mr. Dan McDade, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family, saying we'll see you in the fast lane.